So I have three qualities of communication that I want to look at with you in this time we have this morning. I want to talk about communicating with restraint, and I want to talk about using pleasant words, and about delighting in understanding our children. So restrained speech is quiet speech. I need to change my notes disordered here. I was distracting me. I'm trying to figure, what am I not seeing here? So let me get back to this. So restrained speech, quiet, pleasant words, focus on understanding our kids. But before I get to that, this is what I was looking for and not finding in my notes. I want to separate this. Is that a storm? I want to separate this as much as I possibly can from just a lecture. This too shall pass. Okay. I want to separate this as much as I can from just a lecture on communication techniques. Because godly communication is spiritual. It's profoundly spiritual. And in all these aspects of communication, I want to talk to you about restraint, using pleasant words, delighting in understanding our children. All those are reflections of wisdom in communication. In fact, many of the passages I'll take you to, I'm going to use a lot of passages if you're taking notes today, have the word wise or the word wisdom in the passage. And yesterday, if you were here yesterday, Philip DeCourcy did a wonderful job talking to us about the fear of man, the fear of the Lord, because the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So I want to separate this as much as I possibly can from simply a discussion of communication techniques, because I want to rather think of the fear of the Lord, and not that kind of slavish fear where I'm afraid God's going to, you know, hit me with a lightning bolt, but the fear of the Lord in the sense of awe of God, reverence of God, being dazzled by God and amazed by God and amazed by His glory and thrilled with the privilege of knowing God and living in a sense of awe and reverence of God. So when we think about the fear of God, we're thinking about it's something that is a communication that is biblical, that has biblical foundations, and it's rooted in a life of faith. In a life of that reflects confidence in God and joy in God and living in the expectation that God is with me, God will care for me, God will care for our family, God will enable me to speak in the ways that I ought to speak. It's that fear of God that is the foundation for everything I want to talk to you about. So I want to separate this as much as I can from just a lecture on communication techniques that you might receive from an HR department in any corporation, or you might have a little seminar you go to that talks about communication techniques. This is something far more profound than that, because it's the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. It's living in awe and reverence of God. And so it's communication style that reflects confidence in God, that reflects a life of faith in God, that reflects hope in God, so that my communication is being dictated by a love for God and confidence in God. And I'm not an anxious person. I'm not a scared person. I'm not a frantic person who's desperately trying to control my kids and control the people in my world. But I'm a person who's living in faith, who's living in confidence in God, whose hope is in the Lord. And I'm speaking out of that spiritual strength that is mine as a child of the King, and that a person who lives in the fear of the Lord, that sense of awe, reverence of God, hope in God, joy in God, confidence in God, all those things, because the greater God is in your vision, the larger God is in your vision, the more you see of God, the more you delight in God, the more you're overwhelmed with God, the more godly and appropriate your communication is going to be. And because your hope day by day, your hope even as you engage your children, is not just in your ability to persuade them and somehow get them to see the wisdom of what you're saying, but your hope is actually in God. And I'm speaking faithfully, I'm speaking truthfully, because my hope is in God. And it's that sense of the fear of the Lord. I wish I could just overlay the wonderful things Philip said yesterday about the fear of the Lord, because he spoke about it very helpfully and very appropriately. Some of you were here and able to hear that. So as we think about communication, we're thinking about the fear of the Lord, and that wisdom comes from the fear of the Lord. So means of communication is where I want to start. I want communication with restraint. Many people pride themselves as telling it like it is. My wife was, I was talking to her last night on the phone, and she was talking about a ladies' meeting that she had been part of yesterday, and someone was kind of expressing that idea, you know, I just tell like it is, you know, people might like it, they might not like it, I don't care, you know, I just tell like it is, you know, that kind of idea is kind of a popular notion in the culture. But the Bible does not prize unbridled speech. The Bible doesn't prize just, you know, speaking without careful thought and careful attention. In fact, pleasant speech, nurturing speech, speech that builds up and encourages and strengthens the person with whom we're talking, is never thoughtless, careless, impetuous speech. We need to be thoughtful and intentional, careful in the ways that we speak. And Proverbs 17:21 speaks of this, the importance of restraint. A man of knowledge uses words with restraint. A man of understanding is even tempered. Wise people speak with restraint. A person of understanding is going to be restrained in the ways that he talks. He's going to speak with frankness, he's going to speak with candor, but his words are going to be framed in such a way that they're designed to benefit the people who hear him and the people who listen. So let's look at some elements of restrained speech. One of those I want us to see is quiet words. Ecclesiastes 9:17 has this wonderful phrase, "The quiet words of the wise are more to be heeded than the shouts of the rulers of fools." The quiet words of the wise. I observed this actually as a school teacher when I was teaching school before I was in ministry. I could get the class's attention more quickly by saying, class, I've got something to tell you. Then, class, are you listening? When I'm shouting, they're not paying attention. When I'm whispering, they're all ears. You know, it's just a very simple thing. The quiet words of the wise are more to be heeded than the shouts of the rulers of fools. When I'm shouting at somebody, I've put emotion in the foreground. And that's what they're being impressed by. They're being impressed by the emotion, the forcefulness of my words, and meaning is in the background. But the quiet words of the wise put meaning in the foreground and emotion in the background. The quiet words of the wise are more to be heeded than the shouts of the rulers of fools. Another matter of restraint is using too many words. Ecclesiastes 6:11 says, "The more words, the less meaning." And how does that profit anyone? The more words, the less meaning. I think of it this way. There's word inflation. You know, if you throw out a lot of words, all the words have less value. The more words you throw out there, the less weight any of those words have, because, you know, you can wear your children out with too many words. And often long conversations can be summarized in just several sentences. But meaning is lost when you're using too many words. I remember one time I'd had a conversation with one of my sons. And my wife and I talked about this. It was one of those conversations we need to have with him, and we agreed I would have the conversation. So I went and talked with him, and we went to a room where we could speak together in privacy, and we're talking back and forth. This conversation went on for 45 minutes. My dear wife, she's outside the room. She's praying for me. She's hoping that I'm not saying anything reckless or anything inappropriate, and that I'm doing okay with this conversation. And finally, after 45 minutes, we emerged from the room, and as soon as she could get me aside, she said, "Well, how did it go?" So it went real well. Well, you were in there for a long time. What did you talk about? Well, and I summarized the entire conversation in three sentences. Guess what? That's all that was needed that night. You know, you can wear your kids out with too many words and just droning on and on, and it doesn't help them. It exasperates your children. Meaning is lost when words are too many. The Proverbs chapter 10, though, identifies another problem with too many words. It says, when words are many, sin is not absent, but he who holds his tongue is wise. When words are many, sin is not absent. You know, have you ever had the situation where you got involved in a conversation with your kids, and especially, boy, when you have teenage kids and you get involved in these very drawn out, emotionally charged conversations, and in a long, emotionally draining conversation, you will find yourself saying unguarded, inappropriate things that you should not have said, and later you'll think, how did I ever end up there? That's not the conversation I wanted to have. I didn't want the conversation to go there. I got carried away and I said things I should have never said. And I think there's a very clear warning here. When words are many, sin is not absent. I think of this, you know, one of the ways I think about this proverb is that if you let me talk long enough, I'm going to say something I shouldn't have said. And I'm going to be wiser if I speak less and listen more. A third issue of restraint is very obvious, but it's stated for us in the Proverbs, and it's worth thought. Think first, speak second. The heart of the wise, this is an interesting passage, 15:28. The heart of the wise weighs its answer. Remember who the wise person is, the fear of the Lord person. Person is living a life of faith and confidence in God, hoping in God, trusting in God, not anxious, not fearful, not striving to somehow make, you know, push things uphill. The person with that kind of hope in God, the wise man weighs his answers. And in contrast to that, this is one of those proverbs where you have opposite contrasts. The mouth of the wicked gushes evil. So the wise person is weighing his answers. It's a very nice metaphor. He puts his words on the scales. He asks himself, is this the best thing to say? Is this the best time to say it? Is this the best way to frame it? He's putting his words on the scales. He's weighing his answers. He's thinking before he speaks. He's not just responding impetuously. He's exercising restraint. He's stopping, reflect, to think. Is this what I want to say? Is this the way I want to say it? Is this the best time to say it? Maybe this needs to be said, but maybe this is not the best moment. But the person with wisdom, because he's living in the fear of the Lord, he's living in confidence and faith in God, he's not anxious and fearful, he's not trying to make things happen. He's weighing his words. The wicked man, in contrast, gushes evil. No careful thought. No restraint, no perception that once words are spoken, they cannot be unspoken. You can never unspeak a word that you've said. You can't take it back. You can apologize for it, but you can't recall it. That word's out there, and you said it. You can say, I'm sorry I said that. I shouldn't have said that. That was wrong for me to say. I wish I could take it back, but you can't unsay it. And there's that sense of restraint that is being spoken of here that's so important for us in parenting to think about. Another Proverb 29:20 says, "Do you see a man who speaks in haste? There's more hope for a fool than for him." Now, if you read the Proverbs, you know that the Proverbs don't hold out a lot of hope for a fool. I mean, that statement, "Do you see a man who speaks in haste? There's more hope for a fool than for him," is really a statement. He's a hopeless case. And Solomon encourages careful speech with the observation, "A man finds joy in an apt reply. How good is a timely word?" Proverbs 15:28. Words carefully chosen are a blessing both to the speaker and to the hearer. So we want to use words with restraint. We want to use quiet speech. We want to avoid too many words. We want to think about what we say before we say it. The second thing I want for us to think about is the manner of our communication. And pleasant words, using pleasant words. Proverbs 16:21 says, "Pleasant words promote instruction." In fact, the verse begins, "The wise in heart are called discerning, and pleasant words promote instruction." So wisdom of heart that is acquired through the fear of the Lord. I want to continue to make that connection, because the ways that our inappropriate speech patterns are tied to attitudes of heart. It's this matter of wisdom. You know, if I'm living in the fear of God, if I'm full of faith, confidence in God, I'm trusting in God, I'm not anxious and fearful, I'm resting in God, I have a large view of who God is, that wisdom that comes from the fear of the Lord is going to be reflected in pleasant speech. Words that are good, words that are kind, words spoken with love and graciousness and tact promote instruction. They make instruction easily received. They grease the wheels of instruction. Harsh words, loud words, demeaning words, demanding words don't reflect the gentle confidence of someone who's living in the fear of the Lord. If we're living before God with a sense of awe of God, reverence for God, hope in God, confidence in God, resting in God to do the work in our kids that we can't possibly do anyway, that keeps us from destructive speech. But harsh, demanding, demeaning words don't reflect confidence in God. They reflect a life that is fearful and angry and controlling. Imagine trying to warn a young teenage boy of the dangers of companionship with a unruly and rebellious friend. That's a huge task. I mean, that's a huge hurdle. To help your child to receive this warning is a great task in itself. But if you add to that an air of impatience or harshness in your manner of communication, you've made it an insurmountable hurdle. Because impatience and anger do not make instruction easy to receive. Proverbs 16:23-24, "A wise man's heart guides his mouth, and his lips promote instruction. Pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the body, and healing to the soul." Indulge me here. Allow me to connect the dots for you again. Wise man. A wise man is a fear of the Lord man. It's a man who's living in confidence of God, in awe of God, in reverence toward God, hoping in God, trusting in God, God is large in his vision. So as he engages his kids, he's engaging his kids with this, in the knowledge of who God is and how great God is and how glorious God is and how powerful God is. And there's a spiritual quality that Solomon is speaking of when he talks about wisdom. Remember how Psalm 25 says, the Lord confides in those who fear him, and he makes his covenant known to them. So the wise man, this man who has the fear of the Lord draws him into his confidence. There's that God reveals his covenant to him. There's this hope in God that is being spoken of here. And these qualities that enable a person to speak appropriately, to speak with pleasant tones and pleasant ways, are spiritual qualities. That's one of the things I want you to walk away with today. The kind of speech we need to have with our children, it's not just a matter of learning a style of speech. These are spiritual qualities. These are qualities that are developed on our knees before God. They're qualities that are developed in devotion to God. They're qualities that are developed when we stop and bring ourselves before God. They're deeply spiritual qualities. And that's what's being spoken of here. Those qualities are what enable a person to speak in a way that promotes instruction. Because he knows, the wise man knows, that if his words are to bring healing, if they're to bring sweetness to the soul and healing to the bones, they've got to be pleasant words. Pleasant words promote instruction. Can I urge you, use pleasant words in your home. Use pleasant words when you interact with your spouse. Because pleasant words are easily received. Pleasant words are, it's a wonderful word picture here. They're like a honeycomb. They're sweet. They're tasty. They're soothing. They're beautiful. See, when a parent is angry and out of control and yelling at his children, it doesn't matter how accurate his assessments are. He may be completely accurate in his assessments, but his words are framed in such a way that they will not be received by his children. Because the parent who's harsh and unkind, he can be completely accurate in his assessments. His kids are going to reject those assessments. They're going to reject them because of the ways that they're framed, the words that they're framed in. And you know, I've had so many times when I've taught this material to people, and I've had someone come to me afterwards, and they come with, sometimes it's even with kind of offhanded, almost funny sort of jokes. Like one guy recently came to me, he said, you know, he says, whoever said that pleasant words promote instruction doesn't live in my house. That's kind of a funny thing to say, you know, and it's disarming because he's saying it in humor. But it's really a statement of unbelief. In other words, pleasant words promote instruction, that doesn't really work in the real world. In fact, I've had people tell me that. They say, you know, I know that it says there, pleasant words promote instruction, but, you know, they don't work for me. I mean, when I use pleasant words, my kids don't listen. But if I get in their face, if I really get in their face, then they listen and they hear me and I really accomplish something. I'm persuaded the parent who's telling himself that is fooling himself. In fact, if you could do a selfie at that moment, if you could see yourself at that moment, you're red-faced, you're flecking a little flecks of spit on them because you're speaking so vituperatively, and they're looking at this red-faced person. If you could see yourself at that moment, you would see how you really look to them. I mean, they're looking at you and thinking, look at this guy. He is certifiably an idiot. I mean, look at him. You know, red face yelling at me. I mean, he's crazy. You know, and the fact that our kids will back down in those moments doesn't mean that we promoted instruction. They're responding to you the way you respond to a crazy person you meet on the street. And you meet some crazy person on the street and they're saying some wild, crazy thing to you, and you just say, yeah, whatever, you know, you just try to get away. You don't engage him. You think, I just want to get out of here. This person is not safe to be around. And so our kids may back down at the moment when we're harsh and unkind. But you can frighten a kid into momentary submission by a verbal rant, but that doesn't mean that they're listening. You haven't promoted instruction. You're actually undermining instruction. And lest you think that's overstated, Proverbs 15:2 says, "The tongue of the wise commends knowledge, but the mouth of fools gushes folly." The tongue of the wise commends knowledge. One of the ways I think about that is, you know, I want to be a salesman for truth. You know, I want to commend knowledge. I want to be a person who speaks with such wisdom and tact and skill, because I'm living in the fear of the Lord, that my words commend knowledge. My words are a commendation for the wisdom that I'm trying to give to my children. In contrast to that, the mouth of the fool gushes folly. There's just projectile folly coming out of the mouth of the fool. He's vomiting out folly. I mean, it's that kind of a vivid picture. He's gushing folly. The parent who's berating his child is the mouth of a fool who's gushes folly. And no parent ever demeaned his children and accomplished good ends. And when you say to your kids, you know, don't be such a loser. You know, only losers hang out with losers. You know, I mean, no child has ever responded to that by saying, "Boy, you're right, Dad. Thank you. I needed to hear that." It's kind of a slap up the side of the face, but it's just what I needed. You're telling it like it is. Thanks for that. No, the kid sulks off and he feels like, you know, forget it. I can't talk to you. And I don't trust you with your assessments. Proverbs 10:11 says, "The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life, but violence overwhelms the mouth of the wicked." The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life. Think of your words as a fountain. You know, I want the words that I speak to be words that are sweet, not words that are bitter, not words that are brackish, not words that are unpleasant, but words that are life-giving, pleasant waters. I want my words to be pleasant words. The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life. The fear of the Lord in Proverbs 14:27 is a fountain of life. It's very interesting. You know, that fear of the Lord theme coming up again. The fear of the Lord is so fundamental to what we do in conversation. Proverbs 10:21 says, "The lips of the righteous man nourish many, but fools will die for lack of judgment." I need to ask myself, if I'm speaking to my children, are these words that are nourishing words? Are they words that are going to provide nourishment for my children? I mean, you would never think of feeding your children dog food, but we will speak to children sometimes in the way that we'll speak to a dog that has upset us and is underfoot, with that same kind of harshness and that same kind of destructive tone. Proverbs 25:11 says, "A word aptly spoken is like apples of silver in settings of gold." I'm sorry, apples of gold in settings of silver. You knew that, didn't you? "A word aptly spoken, it's like apples of gold in settings of silver." I've pondered this. What is the metaphor here? What does this mean? Apples of gold in settings of silver. And what I've concluded is that what it's describing, I mean, if I had apples of gold in settings of silver, it would be a very precious, delightful, attractive collectible. You know, something that is nicely crafted, attractively made, beautifully set, something that is an attractive collectible that you put in a and a cupboard with glass doors and a little overhead light is something that is carefully crafted. It's carefully made. It's made with attention to detail. It's made with care. It's made with an eye for beauty. I think that's what this proverb is describing. So what it's saying is that words aptly spoken, words appropriately spoken are like that. They're like a collectible. They're like something beautiful. And you don't create a collectible item, numbered item of beauty, carelessly and thoughtlessly. It's crafted, it's designed, it's made. It's the product of skill and wisdom. And see, that's what's being commended here. The words appropriately spoken, apples of gold and settings of silver. The words of a wise man's mouth are gracious. Ecclesiastes 10:12. The words from a wise man's mouth are gracious. They're gracious words. Remember what grace says. I mean, grace is God giving us what we do not deserve, right? And sometimes people say, well, if you act like that, that's what you deserve. Thankfully, God doesn't give us what we deserve. In the grace of the gospel, we are given what we do not deserve. We are given his kindness. And parents sometimes say, well, that's what he deserved. He acts like a jerk, so I'm going to treat him like a jerk. A wise man's words are gracious words, pleasant words. And let me encourage you, use pleasant words in your home, because pleasant words are honeycomb. The third element of communication I want to talk to you about is delighting and understanding. It's the goal of communication. And I'm persuaded that the finest art of communication is not your ability to express your ideas. Now, for most of us, if I ask you, are you a skilled communicator? That's what you think about. You think immediately of your ability to express yourself clearly. The Proverbs turn that around on us. So that the finest art of communication is not your ability to express yourself, it's your ability to understand the person with whom you're speaking. And Proverbs speak to this with such great clarity. Proverbs 18:2, a fool finds no pleasure in understanding, but delights in airing his own opinion. A fool, boy, how many times have I been a fool in a conversation with my children where I wasn't delighting in understanding them? I was delighting in getting them to understand me. You know, my goal was not understanding, my goal was getting something off my chest, saying something I wanted to say. So the fool, says, does not delight in understanding, but delights in airing his own opinion. It's so easy to be a fool in a conversation with our kids. I had a conversation like that one night with one of my sons. I went to his bedroom at bedtime, my bedtime. He was old, teenager, and they were at that stage of life where they stayed up later than I did. But in any case, I went to the room at bedtime. I said, we need to talk. And, I said all the things I wanted to say. I wasn't kind or harsh or ugly in what I said. It was, I spoke with restraint. But I got done with the conversation, and I said, I'm glad we had this chance to talk together. I'm going to pray. I'm going to go to bed. So I prayed, went to bed. Within a few minutes, he was knocking at the door. Dad, are you guys still up? Yeah, come on in. What do you want? He said, I just wanted to say, when you left the room, you said you were glad we had a chance to talk together. I just wanted to point out I didn't say anything. So forgive me. I had a good talk. You had a good listen. I'm sorry. If I had given you a chance to say something, what would you have said? Now, he was a teenager at the time. This is vintage teenager. He said, I don't know. It doesn't matter anymore. I just want to say I didn't say anything. Now, there's a subtext here, isn't there? I mean, the subtext is, you had an opportunity. You weren't interested in what I had to say. I'm not going to tell you now. See, I was a fool that night. Because I could have said everything I wanted to say to my son in the context of asking good questions. I could have asked questions that were designed to draw him out and to understand him. And I could have then, in the context of responding to him and his responses to my questions and so forth, I could have said the things that I thought were necessary and appropriate. I said things that were good, and I didn't say them in mean ways, but my whole focus was not, I want to understand my son. My focus was, I want my son to understand me. And this passage says that's the posture of a fool. Proverbs 18:13 makes the same point. It says, he who answers before listening, that is his folly and his shame. It's so easy to do that, isn't it? To answer before listening. I see my son coming toward me. I know what you're going to ask. The answer is no. But Dad, what part of no don't you understand? I didn't even get a chance to ask my question. You don't have to ask your question. I'm your father. Before word is on your tongue, I know it all together. Is that the Bible somewhere? Now, they never walk away saying, wow, it's so great to have a dad who's a mind reader. All my friends are jealous of me. It's so great to communicate with you because you always know what I'm thinking before I even speak. They don't walk away that way. They walk away feeling like, I can't get to first base with you. You didn't even give me the courtesy of hearing what I had to say before you fired off your response. You weren't interested in what I was asking. You had already made up your mind. You didn't even give me a fair hearing. There's a very positive example in Proverbs 20, verse 5. It says, the purposes of a man's heart are deep waters, and a man of understanding draws him out. Boy, I want to be a person of understanding who knows how to draw out those deep waters in my kids. Because even with our teenagers, who seem so vacuous, there are deep waters. And we want to learn how to ask good questions. How to ask questions that are qualitative questions. Questions that are not, can't be answered yes or no. Questions that are not quantitative, but questions that can't be answered yes or no. So we're asking good questions. And when we ask a question and our children reply, we can follow that up with another question. Oh, well, that's interesting. How did you conclude that? Or what makes you think that? And I'm asking questions because I want to understand this person. I'm not trying to trap him or catch him or, I caught you. It's not that. I'm trying to ask, I want to understand. So I want to ask good questions so I can draw him out. And it's amazing how children learn whether or not you're interested in understanding them. And if they're persuaded you're not interested in understanding them, they are not going to open themselves up to you. We had a counseling situation a few years ago. My wife and I were counseling together a couple that had very serious marriage issues. They also had six kids. One of their children, a daughter, was just really struggling in very needy ways. And so as an emergency, we were really trying to help her. So Margie was spending time with this 15-year-old girl to help her with the things that were boiling and surging inside her. And in the meantime, we were trying to help this couple learn to be better communicators and better parents and so forth. So while we were working with them, Margie was working with this girl because the things going on in her couldn't wait for her parents to develop the skills that they needed to interact with her. So with their permission, Margie was talking to this girl, 15-year-old girl. Margie would finish the counseling session. She would say, now, Bethany, here's some things I want you to think about in the next week. And she would write out two or three questions for this girl. This girl would come back the next week with pages pages of stuff written in a little tiny script. Deep, I mean, insightful understanding of herself and her family, the dynamics of family life. And I mean, there were deep waters in this girl. Now, she wouldn't talk to her parents. Why wouldn't she talk to her parents? She had concluded that their way of communicating with me, they're not really interested in what I have to say. They're only interested in what they want me to hear. And so she had learned just to shut down. But when Margie showed her a different face and a person who is willing to hear and willing to listen and willing to understand, delighting in understanding her, it was like someone had opened the floodgates. I mean, there were deep waters in this girl. But this proverb says, a man of understanding draws him out. And see, we want to be people of understanding who know how to draw out those deep waters that are in our kids, who know how to ask those good questions, who know how to follow up, and even know how to come back around to a question. Say, you know what, I was thinking about what you said last week, and I was wondering, how did you come to that conclusion? What are the things that make you think that way? What are the things that make you feel that way? And if we can listen in a non-judgmental way and have that person feel like they're being heard, it's amazing how people will open up. It's amazing how even kids will open up. Even kids who seem like they're not the talkative ones will open up if we ask the right questions. So I think learning to be a person who asks those kinds of questions is such an important thing. But I want you to notice in 20 verse 5, the man of understanding draws them out. We want to be people of understanding. And everything I'm talking to you about in this hour about communication, I'm persuaded that the attitudes of heart that make it work have to do with the fear of the Lord, living in awe of God, reverence of God, trusting God, hoping in God, not being anxious, fearful people who are trying to control and manage our kids, but are able to relax, just listen, talk, pray, trust the Lord, and just continue to be faithful. That's really a key, I think, with communication with our kids. And the qualities that enable us to speak in these ways are spiritual qualities. And of course, there's a whole range of all kinds of questions we can ask people. What will get to heart issues? I wish I had the URL up here, but there's a wonderful website that has, if you look for X-ray questions, by David Paulison. David is going to be with the Lord, but he was such a mentor to me, and I owe him such a great debt, and everything in Shepherding a Child's Heart is really a reflection of things I learned from David. But David Paulison, Powlison. If you look up Paulison X-ray questions, you'll have pages and pages of questions that are the kinds of good questions you can ask that will enable you to understand the person with whom you're speaking. May God give us grace to do that. Let me pray with you. Father, we come to you asking that you would give us grace and wisdom to be parents who speak with restraint, who use pleasant words that promote instruction, and who delight in understanding our children. Lord, we know that the qualities that will enable us to engage our kids in those ways are not are not just in the world of ideas, but they're spiritual qualities. They're qualities that are obtained on our knees as we are before God, living in the fear of the Lord, trusting God, resting in Him, living lives of reverence and awe, hope, faith. Lord, we pray that we would be such people, that we'd be able to speak truth to our children, we'd be able to hear them and listen to them and have them feel heard. We pray for your grace in all these things, for Christ's glory. Amen.